Today we're going to take up case 55 of the Hekigan Roku, Blue Cliff Records. Ta Wu and Qian Yuan went to a house to express condolences. Yuan rapped on the coffin and asked, "Living or dead?" Ta Wu said, "I can't say living or dead." Chen Yuan asked, "Why can't you say?" Ta Wu said, "I can't say, I can't say." On the way home, Yuan said, "Your Reverence, please tell me right away. If you don't, I shall hit you." Ta Wu said, "If you like, I'll allow you to hit me, but I'll never say." And then the student, Yuan, hit him. Later, after some years passed, Ta Wu passed away. So Yuan went to Sekiso and told him this story. Sekiso said, "Alive, I can't say. Dead, I can't say." And Qian Yuan asked again, "Why can't you say?" Sekiso said, "I can't say, I can't say." And with these words, Yuan was enlightened. One day, Yuan appeared in the lecture hall with a hoe in probably over his shoulder and walked from east to west, north to south. Sekiso asked, "What are you doing?" Shen Yuan said, "I am seeking the sacred bones of our late master." Sekiso said, "On the billows of the great ocean, white caps swell to the sky. Why do you search for our late master's sacred bones other than that?" And about 100 years later after that, some comments by other teachers, Secho said, "Nothing, nothing." Yuan said, "That is good for my training." Dai Gengfu said, "The sacred bones of our late master still exist." So please sit comfortably. And I'd like to dedicate this talk today to Hannah Levy Dawn Gayard. So here in this scene, we have Ta Wu and Qian Yuan. And you can imagine the context. It is probably a funeral, and the coffin is there, and the two monks come along to pay their respects and express their condolences. So when Qian Yuan knocks on the coffin, "Living or dead?" And Ta Wu says, "I can't say living, and I can't say dead." So this is a strange interaction, yet it goes straight to the core of the teachings. It's obvious that there's a dead body in the coffin. So what is the monk here really asking? And Qian Yuan's not being disrespectful hitting the coffin either. He was contemplating, where do you go after you die? When you see a dead body, it's obvious to everyone that it's just a shell, a form. Where has the man gone? And the question arises, is the spirit or soul, consciousness, separate from the body or not? Who dies? If there's such a thing as rebirth, what takes rebirth? What does not die? If you think literally about life and death, then you'll miss the point of this koan entirely. Ta Wu said, "Alive, I can't say. Dead, I can't say." Right here, our essential nature has a deep place beyond the waves of grief. It is undisturbed. It is our original dwelling place beyond birth and death. In an unawakened state, birth and death are the great markers of our lives, the great bookends of our life. And certainly birth and death are poignant moments and experiences that shape all our lives. Being a mother and now a grandmother, I experienced the pains of and joys of birth and also delivered my daughter's first child. And it's a miracle to bring precious, new, shining little beings into the world. It's a great honour and a privilege to be a midwife. And I was a midwife for many years in the rural region of northern New South Wales, delivering a lot of babies at home and home birth. And the collective of midwives that I worked with was called Birth and Beyond. And we saw midwifery not just as a specialised nursing practice, but spiritual midwifery. And for us, it was a great commitment and journey to labour through the night, supporting women to give birth to their child. It was a labour of love and support. And so it's an extraordinary journey to be at those births, yeah, to be at those wonderful passages of birth, that miraculous moment. And death at the other end of life is the inevitable final business of death, that great floor of darkness which we will all descend to. And recently I was at a funeral at Bodhi Farm, the community that I founded for, and lived there for 20 years, spiritual community. And my closest friend, one of my closest friends, Gay Longmuir, his daughter Hannah Lever Dawn Gaya, died at recently in Athens at the age of 26. And she fell from a 5-story building accidentally. And I was the midwife at her birth and helped deliver Hannah into the world. And my children grew up with Hannah. So she was very much part of my family and deeply connected to her and her mother and father. But the death of a young person seems so much harder to bear. And in some sense, it's a tragic loss. And Gay, her mother, is not only my closest friend, but also she is a member, long-term member of the Sydney Zen Centre from its inception. And it's also, she's been recently, in the last 5 years, living in Melbourne and working in Melbourne, and she's been part of this group. And she was due to attend this session. And there's a story of a lovely story of a Zen master who was a great calligrapher as well. And he was asked by a wealthy family, benefactors of the temple, to do a blessing and to write some calligraphy. So he wrote this piece of calligraphy which said, "May you all die in the right order." And indeed, it is a blessing to die in the right order. He knew something about suffering when we have to bury, as parents, bury your own children. So waves of grief and loss can sweep everything out of your house and out of your mind and turn your whole life upside down. But it also brings into focus what really matters in life, our priorities and our deep loving connections with each other. And it's that love that holds us up through such tragedy and times of suffering. And it's only spiritual teachings and that deep loving support that gets through the death of a loved one, particularly if it's your only child. And so Gay wanted me to read this poem today, which is about death and grief, and it's a poem by Rumi, and it's a poem that she read out at the funeral. It's called The Death of Saladin. You left ground and sky weeping, mind and soul full of grief. No one can take your place in existence, or in absence. Both mourn, the angels, the prophets, and this sadness I feel has taken from me the taste of language, so that I cannot say the flavour of my being apart. The roof of the kingdom within has collapsed. When I say the word you, I mean 100 universes. Pouring grief water or sweet or secret dripping into the heart, eyes in the head or eyes of the soul, I saw yesterday that all these flow out to find you when you're not here. That bright firebird Saladin went like an arrow, and now the bow trembles and sobs. If you know how to weep for human beings, weep for Saladin. I wrote a little haiku after the funeral. And as we took the coffin, Bodhifam, luckily in the early days, I applied for a cemetery on the community. So we have the right to have a cemetery and bury about 10 people. Unfortunately, I only applied for 10. I don't know what I was thinking of at that time. But anyway, we have places for 10 people on that community. And so the graveyard is down on a beautiful promontory overlooking the river and in a lovely piece of forest. And as we were carrying the coffin down there, the wisteria, the native wisteria in the tall gum trees, was the flowers were just falling on over everybody. So this is the haiku that I wrote for Hannah. Native wisteria flowers fall on the coffin. Hannah's spirit rising up, unbroken. And this is a poem that's also about brokenness and loss and transcending that brokenness and grief. By Rashini Ray. Is a wonderful practitioner, a Zen practitioner and poet. There is a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There is a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joy, and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There is a hollow space too vast for words through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place which is unbreakable and whole, while learning to sing. So these contemplations about death and what is beyond birth and death, what does not die, are deep contemplations. Our normal consciousness often locates itself somewhere on that continuum between birth and death. And we often think that birth's back here somewhere and death's out there, hopefully down the track. And this sense of self identifies with this linear sense of time, this trajectory of time. And we identify with this whole mind-body process as me, as my. And we identify with name and form and think that we end at the skin and that this bag of bones is who I am. And we cling to existence, and therefore when we cling to existence and this form and name and form, we will fear death. To say that we begin at birth and end at death is only partially true. And it's a very limited way of seeing ourselves. The heart of the Buddhist teachings points to an awakening to our true nature, waking up the mind beyond birth and death, that is timeless, serene, and free. So coming back to this story, and this koan continues. Qian Yuan presses his teacher. So, why can't you say? Ta Wu said, I can't say living and I can't say dead. I can't say. I can't say. I won't say. I won't say. And Qian Yuan says, please tell me right away or I will hit you. And Ta Wu says, well, I will allow you to hit me, but I'll never say. So this is a big thing, you know, to say to one's teacher, I will hit you. And to hit his teacher, because it was forbidden in the monastery. And one could be expelled for such things, because it was breaking the first precept of kind of violence in some sense. The precepts are based on ahimsa, not only about respect for one's teacher. So the teacher says, well, I'll let you hit me, but I won't say. And so he hits his teacher. But Yuan here was seeking the truth and seeking the truth and understanding in words, and could not comprehend why his teacher would not tell him. Or was his teacher telling him? I won't say living and I won't say dead. I can't say, I can't say. Can we really say and pinpoint exactly what that is? That state of mind of awakening that's beyond birth and death. Then later on his teacher passed away, Ta Wu passed away, and Yuan went to another teacher, Shi Shuang, Sekiso, and told him the whole story all over again. And Shuang said, alive I can't say, dead I can't say. And Yuan by this time was very frustrated. Why can't you say? Tell me, please tell me the truth. What is it that's beyond birth and death? Shuang said, I can't say, I can't say. And with these words, finally Yuan got it and was enlightened. And what I like here is Yuan's perseverance with his koan and question. Many years had passed between when Yuan first rapped on the coffin and asked the question, living or dead, what is it that transcends life and death? What happens after death, that kind of question? And it plagued him, and you can feel his desperation and perseverance in wanting to understand, but also his dedication to his question, to his koan. And even after his teacher passed away, he went on with the same question, and the same story. And it was like it was just stuck in his mind. It was like, it was like that koan that grabs hold of you, that just won't let you go. And so the great mystery cannot be pinned down, cannot say if it's living or dead. Cannot be defined and cannot be labeled and cannot be categorized. Emptiness cannot be categorized. Even the word emptiness doesn't do it, It just becomes a word, a concept. And the koan around death, there's a number of koans that we take up around contemplation of death. And many of the great masters have contemplated these questions about death. And in the miscellaneous koans, we have there's two very, very important koans. I think some of the most important koans in the whole miscellaneous book of koans that we take up. One of them is, when you have attained your self-nature, you can free yourself from birth and death. How will you free yourself when your eyes are going to the ground? Which means when your eyes are darkening, when you are dying, you're about to die. How will you free yourself at that moment? The second koan in that series is, when you have freed yourself from birth and death, you will know where to go. After your body has separated into the four elements, earth, water, fire and air, where do you go? And in any deep spiritual experience, sort of in some ways, put some end to our fears about death. Release some of that fear. Maybe not completely, but it certainly puts an ease to that. Yeah. The first lines of the Tao Te Ching remind us of that which cannot be pinned down. The Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. There's an ancient Hindu story about seven wise sisters that's similar to this case. It's a mythological story. Once long ago, a group of seven wise sisters were walking through a graveyard on the outskirts of Rajgir in India. One of the sisters pointed to a corpse and said to the others, "There is a man's body. Where has the man gone?" "What?" another sister said in disbelief. "What did you say?" And with this, the sisters all realized the truth and were instantly enlightened. Indra, lord of devas, was moved by this and showered a rain of flowers down upon all the seven sisters. "Tell me," he said, "if there is anything that any of you holy ladies desire. I will see that you have it as long as I am here." In response to Indra's offer, one of the sisters said, "None of us lack the four basic necessities of life. We possess the seven rare treasures as well. But there are three things we desire from you. Please give us a tree without roots, some land where there is neither light nor shade, and a mountain valley where a shout does not echo." "Ask anything else, ladies," replied Indra. "I will gladly provide it, but to be truthful, I just don't have those things to give you." One of the sisters said, "If you don't have them," said the woman, "how can you possibly expect to help people liberate themselves?" Indra finally took the young woman to visit the Buddha. And when the Buddha learned why Indra had come, he said, "As far as that's concerned, Indra, none of the arahants in my assembly has the slightest clue either. It takes a great bodhisattva to grasp it." So these great ladies have a depth of wisdom there. And we take up some of those lines as a koan. Give me a tree without roots, some land where there is neither light nor shade, and a mountain valley where a shout does not echo. See if you can see into the mind. Has no place to land. Even after Yuan's initial awakening, and then the koan goes on, and there's kind of various stages to this story. Even after his initial awakening, he is still not totally at peace. And so he's questing, and he comes into one day, Yuan appears in the Dharma hall with a hoe and walks from east to west, west to east, north to south, south to north. Now already this is a kind of unusual thing to do. He had probably been working out in the grounds and hoeing and digging in the garden, and so he brings a tool from the outside inside the temple. And of course, well, that's not really the done thing and that's not etiquette. So already there's something going on here, you know, bringing something from the outside inside. And so he's transgressing those boundaries between inside and outside. So he has an eye already here. And if you remember on that earlier Taisho on loving kindness, and I talked about the directions, here we have the directions yeah, from east to west, north to south. So he traverses the Dharma Hall, yeah, walks across it with the hoe over his shoulder. Yeah. And so if you remember, the east is about birth and becoming. Yeah. West is about dying, yeah, and passing away and decay. And north is about death. And south is about living in the land of the life and living. So he traverses these directions through the Dharma Hall, walking, you know, with his hoe. And the teacher sees him and says, "What are you doing?" Yuan says, "I am seeking the sacred bones and relics of my late master, Ta Wu." So, seeking the bones and the sacred relics of the late master. Here there's a little bit of, probably need to know a little bit of history. Relics is, sacred relics is a kind of a funny story in a way in the Buddhist tradition, that there's some belief that great enlightened sages, because of their practice and their samadhi and the power of their mind, make kind of precious jewels inside their body while they practice, while they're alive, and through the enlightenment there's kind of precious little bits of gold and precious jewels. And so when they burn and cremate a teacher's body, they often go and rake through the ashes and look for sacred relics, yeah? These relics, these kind of jewels. And then they're often enshrined in stupas and considered to be holy places, yeah, that have some kind of condensed power in them. So that's what this relics and so is about. And so he's seeking the sacred bones and relics of his late master, Ta Wu. So he's still sort of thinking in some sense, is there some relic? Is there something left behind after death? Yeah? Where are the sacred bones of my teacher? Is there something here? Is there some residue? Yeah? So I really feel for Yuan here. He is such a kind of genuine fellow. He is looking for the relics of his teacher. What is those relics? What are those sacred bones? And I remember when Anne Aitken died, and I was very close to Anne, like a lot of women in the Diamond Sangha, in the Zen tradition, and she was a great soul, and she could have been a teacher in her own right, but she chose not to do that, just to support Aitken Roshi. And she went through the koan curriculum 3 times, by choice. When she'd finished one time, she started again and again, and at the beginning, and went right through 3 times in her lifetime, which is quite an achievement in itself. And I remember after she died, where is Anne? Yeah. Where is Anne? Yeah. And then one day I was sitting on my cushion and saw a beautiful butterfly out in the field, just fluttering around. Yeah. I realized then where Anne was. She never left. So the teacher Shuang here responds to Yuan and says, "On the billows of the great ocean, white caps swell to the sky. What relics and sacred bones of our late master are you looking for other than this?" It's a beautiful image, isn't it, of the billows of the great ocean. Yeah. Billows of the great ocean is like the waves and moment to moment, yeah, life just coming forth, changing the transient nature of everything that we are and that's all around us, you know. Why do you look for the late bones and relics of your late master other than right here, yeah, this moment? It's right here, full and empty. Yeah? Why go searching elsewhere? There are several additional comments here from other monks. Wei Tour added, after all of that commentary about the case, "Nothing, nothing. Why go searching around? Nothing, nothing." Nguyen said, "This is just where I should apply effort. It is good for my training." And he's so humble here. He's a man of deep realization, and yet, nothing, nothing. And it's like we need to somehow dip ourselves in that empty dye bucket over and over and over again. And our koans and our work and our practice on our cushion help us to see into that empty one world over and over. Because it's like we get caught up in little concepts and ideas and remove ourselves, get caught up in our mind and our stories and our stuff. And it takes us away from the bare fact of our true nature. So this, and then the last teacher says the sacred bones of our late master are still present. And it's true, they're always present. Do we really go anywhere in this great universe? Where else is there to go? The disciples of Ramana Maharshi, one of the great Hindu saints, who was one of my favourite teachers and studied at his centre, Ramana's centre, about a couple of years ago, went and did a self-retreat there. He was a great enlightened sage, Ramana. And he lived in South India at a place called Tiruvannamalai in earlier this century. And his students were pleading with their guru when he was dying. And they said to him, to Ramana, "Please don't leave us." And Ramana just said, "Where would I go? I am the only reality." For Ramana Maharshi, there was no passing away. He had entered that great deathless, timeless ocean that does not come or go. A student who had suffered, a student I know and who has suffered a lot of losses at the end of his life, once said, "Even when all the pleasures have been taken away, even when the joy of seeing had gone and his eyesight was failing, he had a brain tumour. Even when his the joy of hearing was fading and was weak, and he lost his sense of smell, was snatched away, and his sense of taste had gone." And this was important because he was a man who loved the senses and the sensual aspects of life. And even when all of those things had faded towards the end of his life, he said, "I don't need anything at all. It's all right being without anything. Just being right here and now is just fine. And this is enough. This breath is enough." Amazing, huh? That one's life can be reduced down to that and it's still enough and you can still find satisfaction and peace even in that moment. He had a wonderful practice. In the Buddha's Parinirvana, he said to and announced to the retinue of monks, when he was lying under the trees in the sal forests in India, he said, "Stop crying. Don't cry over this body. Having been born into this body, I must die. And having met you all, I must leave you. But this mind, this heart, this human being, that true nature which I have realized, that pure nature to which I awakened, you must too, each one of you must realize it. If you then pass this teaching along to all other beings, I will live in this world of the awakened mind eternally, where there is no coming and going. Teach this Dharma, that the awareness of the realization of people's pure original nature does not perish." And his last words were, "Make of yourself a light, rely on the Dharma." And then he passed away. So the clear light nature of mind and the true nature of who you are is always with you. Friends, family, jobs, precious things come and go in our life. But the light of your true nature is always with you, even into the last breath and beyond. It's not something that can ever be taken away from you. So rest in that truth, the light of the Dharma, that which is deathless. There's a poem that I wanted to read to you. I'll close with this poem of Mary Oliver's. Such a great poem. And it's called, I Found a Dead Fox. I found a dead fox beside the gravel road, curled inside the big iron wheel of an old tractor that has been standing for years in the vines at the edge of the road. I don't know what happened to it, when it came there, or why it lay down for good, settling its narrow chin on the rusted rim of the iron wheel, to look out over the fields, and that way died. But I know this, its posture of looking to the last possible moment back into the world made me want to sing something joyous and tender about foxes. But what happened is this, when I began, when I crawled in through the honeysuckle and lay down curling my long spine inside that cold wheel and touched the dead fox and looked out into the wide fields, the fox vanished. There was only myself and the world, and it was I who was leaving. And what could I sing then, O beautiful world? I just lay there and looked at it, and then it grew dark. That day was done with. And then the stars stepped forth and held up their appointed fires, those hot, hard watchmen of the night.